was Babyface who said, "I only think of you on two occasions. That's day and night." And that would apply to me since I don't know what the morning is. I'm not around for it. I'm zonked. I'm dreaming of blondes and brunettes and glasses of beer and all that good stuff. But I only think of you on two occasions, day and night, as a Jaguar fan. When do you first think about this franchise, this organization? You know, love, puppy love, scorn, divorce. I'm sure when you get up, your personal problems or your personal satisfaction is probably the first thing on your mind, right? Along with getting the kids to school and all of this and all of that. But when do you settle in? When do you say, man, Mason Smith, this could be the steal of the draft if it works for this man? A guy who can move around that defensive line, a guy that was one of the highest prospects 4 years ago coming out of high school, a guy that gives you 6'6", 315. You can move him around a little bit. You can ask Eric Armstead to kind of lead by example, take him under his wing, right? Isn't that a great leadership term? Where else in life, if it isn't leadership, do you take someone under your wing? I mean, it's just, it's phenomenal. It's got football written all over it. It's got the NFL draft written all over it. This could make or break this year's draft class. It honestly could. I spent weeks upon weeks upon weeks saying you cannot make the same mistake this year that you made a year ago. You must bring in players who prove it immediately. This roster needs it. This football team needs it. You got it in Brian Thomas. You know, we spoke on him on Friday, and we'll speak about him the entire offseason. He looks the part. The official draft notes from the Jaguars have him listed at 6'4", 205. That's not right. I think he's 6'2", 6'2 and a half. I've seen, you know, 6'2 and 7/10, if you will, whatever. But he's a big body wide receiver. And he gives Trevor Lawrence something that he has not had since Clemson, right? Where he had Justin Ross, he had T. Higgins, etc. Yeah, there's been a couple of guys on the roster who are bigger bodied, but they're not part of the game plan on Sunday. Brian Thomas becomes an immediate starter, right? You don't want him learning. It's Gabe Davis on one side. It's Brian Thomas on the other. It's Christian Kirk in the slot. It's Evan Engram as your tight end. We'll figure things out here with Zay Jones. Right now, I'm kind of under the impression that Zay Jones makes this football team. It would make absolutely zero sense to part with him now, right? He's got a cap figure of $10,752,000. You'd have to eat 6.569 of that if you cut him in the next 31 days. If you wait to post June 1st, then that dead money only becomes $3 million, and you're able to bring back $7,735,000 right now, currently on this, the what, 29th day of April, according to overthecap.com, Jacksonville $30,890 under the team's salary cap. That is their cap space. Going to take anywhere from $8 to $10 million to pay these rookies. And the Trevor Lawrence conversation continues. Obviously, the organization did announce over the weekend that both of those fifth-year options have been picked up. It's the right move. I mean, getting Travis Etienne for $6.1 million next year is a bargain. I would tend to believe one of those who thinks he's got 2 years left. He'll play this year. He'll play next year at $6.1 million. And because running backs are just not valued in this league, that'll be the end of the line. In the next 2 years, we'll learn an awful lot about Tank Bigsby. And most of you are down on him. And that's my point. The Trevor figure, if you haven't heard, and I know that you're very good football fans, you're aware of what's happening. Trevor will play next year at $25.7 million. That's year five of the rookie contract. Again, team-only options only apply to first-rounders. I haven't seen the official language, but I'm well under the belief that they're not picking it up on Mac Jones. So a year ago, you got a really good football player in Anton Harrison. And, you know, you really kind of get the feeling he's getting more comfortable. I noticed that as the season went on. I really don't follow a lot of players on Twitter, hardly any at all. I you know, use that tool just for this. You know, there's not really, I don't have a lot of fun on there. And I, you know, I follow buddies and what have you on Facebook and Instagram and all that stuff. But I use this as only a sports resource. So I don't follow players on it. But my understanding is that he's become pretty colorful on X. And every once in a while, something will come across my timeline that's good. You know, he's got a personality. He's starting to be a little bit more outspoken. Hopefully it does translate to the football field, where we still believe he is a guy that does have some nasty in him. But with the Jaguars this year, you couldn't afford to go that way after Harrison and, you know, bringing to Brenton Strange, bringing to Tank Bigsby, bringing those two fourth-rounders, Ventrell Miller and who else am I thinking of here? Lacey, right? Tyler Lacey, okay? Those four didn't work. They were miserable. But they could all work this year. I'll keep on saying it. This can't be the case for 2024. It has to work with Brian Thomas. It has to work with Mason Smith. It has to work with Jarian Jones, right? Javon Foster, I think the game plan on him right now is a fourth-round pick, an offensive lineman, a guy with more than 50 career games played at Missouri, 39 starts. At left tackle, reportedly, they'd like to work him on the right side. Okay, I think we've heard that before. I mean, who knows what this football team's going to look like in 2025. You could have Javon Foster, your starting right tackle, in 2025. You could have Anton Harrison, your starting left tackle, in 2025. We just don't know the answer to those questions. But he's probably out right now because best-case scenario, as you are aware of, is Cam and Anton, right? And Walker Little's still around. Final year of his deal. I think he can play. Apparently, they think he can't because they always seem to screw around with Walker Little. But can you get it from Thomas, Smith, and Jones? Thomas can be a day one starter. You know, Jarian Jones, you listen to what they said. He's a day one starter. Slot guy, nickel guy. Not as highly regarded at Florida State because you had so many big names that were drafted, like Verse and Fisk. And, you know, the two linebackers were just incredible. Renardo Green got a lot of press and did some really nice things. This kid, Jarian Jones, all he did was make plays. Some man coverage during his career at Mississippi State, right? For the most part here or down the road in Tallahassee, he was a guy that was in the slot. He was a guy that was a nickel and, you know, at Florida State, with the way that they define their backs, with the buck and what have you, they basically run out a 4-2-5. That is the way Florida State is going to defend you, you know, each and every week. And this kid, Jarian Jones, did not get the attention of so many others, but he made plays. He's physical. He made tackles behind the line of scrimmage. He had a game-saving interception to knock off Miami. Pretty good in coverage. And to hear his press conference was one of the, I thought, highlights of the weekend. His personality is going to hit if he can play. Bear in mind, you know, I'm one of the best personalities around here in the last 4 years, and you never heard from him because he couldn't play, is Ke'Lavon Chaisson. I loved his personality. I, you know, the very few times I had an opportunity to talk with him, he kind of owned the room and had a little pizzazz to whatever it is that he was trying to say. That means nothing if you can't play in this league. So we'll find out. And, you know, the whole thing with Jones giving us the Duval and saying he grew up as a Maurice Jones-Drew fan and, you know, this was his dream to play in Jacksonville. You don't hear about that a lot anywhere, for that matter. Maybe you get an Aiden Hutchinson situation who's a Michigan native and played at Michigan. And, of course, it was going to be Trayvon or Hutchinson, and Hutchinson went second. He went to Detroit. Oh, he's from there, played there, stays at home. Okay, you get it. This isn't the deal here with a man born in Mississippi, been around a little bit, but had all those encouraging things to say. I want to say it was it Friday night? Yeah, third-round pick, late third-round pick. That was late Friday, almost into a Saturday morning when the local media had an opportunity to hear from Jarian Jones. So overall, I like what Jacksonville has done. Obviously, the day after is going to be very busy. We're going to take a look at everything here over the next couple of hours. Want to get you as involved as you always are on Into the Night. Two ways to join us. Number one, Twitter and or X, Baloo1010XL. Also on our text line, 641-1010, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. Anything that is Jaguar draft related is good. Okay? Yeah, we're going to look at some grades. That's what we do. That's what everyone does. And I understand that you can grade it an A or you can grade it an F, but we won't know for at least 1 year. In most cases, it takes 2 to 3 to 4 years to fully enhance and grasp what this draft class is going to do. But I think most of you out there would agree with me when I say the difference in a year is you need to find either starters or guys who are seriously going to contribute to this football team. And right now, Brian Thomas, Mason Smith, and Jarian Jones, those three have to be big part, have to be a big part of Doug Peterson's club coming up this year. Again, I don't think it happens with the fourth round pick with Javon Foster, and that's a good thing. I mean, let him come in here and learn. If you go into Javon, if you go into him, then that means there's injuries. You do not want that in the 2024 season. Jordan Jefferson is a little bit more of a project, right? That may have been the biggest surprise in this draft class. Fourth-round pick, another kid out of Louisiana State, Mammoth. You know, he's a nose tackle, 6'4", 320 pounds. Most people downgraded that selection a little bit, thought that he went ahead of when he should have. Okay, don't know much about the corner that they got out of Mississippi, although he does have some length. And DeAndre Prince, 6 interceptions, played some serious competition back in the SEC. You look at this draft class, 9 selections by Trent Baalke, I want to say 6 out of the SEC. I mean, there you go. This is not Gene Smith. This is looking at the best conference year in, year out in college football and saying that's where we're going to go draft our players. Yeah, you got 3 out of Louisiana State. You got Prince out of Mississippi. You got Cam Little, who I would assume becomes a day one starter, right? You used a 6th-round draft pick on him. It's been 20 years since the Jaguars have drafted a kicker. You got to go back to Josh Scobie 20 years ago. Went out and made that pick in the 6th round. So, yeah, 6 guys coming out of the Southeastern Conference. Of course, Foster out of Missouri. Then you got a guy out of the ACC and Jones who did play at Florida State. All right, when you look at everything that happened, the good, the bad, you know, the winners, the losers. The winner to me is this offense. On paper, it's a better offense by going out and getting a big wide receiver. That is exactly what this team needed. Also going out and getting some depth and hopefully a future starter on the offensive line. Wouldn't have minded seeing an offensive lineman higher in the draft. That's something that I've been pretty consistent about, or very consistent about, year after year after year after year. Give me more offensive linemen. Hasn't been a great offensive line scenario around here for Trent Baalke. Now, we'll give him an A+. Absolutely, I will. For going out last year and getting Anton Harrison. He deserves an A+. Other offensive lineman last year, Cooper Hodges, gets a lot of play, right? Oh, he's going to be the guy. He's the future right guard, maybe. Local kid, went to Appalachian State, 7th-round selection. We don't know if he can play. When those comments are made, it's wishful thinking. We don't know if he can play. You go back to 2022, offensive lineman Luke Fortner, that's failed. In 2021, offensive lineman, Walker Little, 2nd-round pick. Again, they have totally screwed that one up with Walker Little. So maybe things are starting to get a little bit better after the Little and Fortner pick. And we'll see what happens with Cooper Hodges. We've got a pretty good feeling about what's happening here with Anton Harrison. But I think that is the main thing that you can look at and say, all right, well, they identified one of their true needs, one of their true losses, and to make the move that they did and to move down six spots and still get your player, I think it's an A-plus for Trent Baalke. That's the biggest win, in my opinion. The biggest loss, well, I think it's twofold. Number one, you couldn't move up for your second-round pick. That was the talk. Baalke admitted it. There were a ton of trades, including the top overall pick in the second round. There was all sorts. And JJ and I were on air Friday night during the beginning part of the second round. And everything was being kind of pushed back a little bit because it was trade after trade after trade. There were hungry teams that were trying to move up, right? Jacksonville didn't get an offer to their liking. Jacksonville didn't get enough in return, or they could not find a partner somewhere along the way to be able to move up. This is something we're seeing now more and more and more of. Trent Baalke trading down, trading down, trading down, having trouble moving up. I understand he moved up for Devin Lloyd 3 years ago. I also want to say he moved up 4 years ago for Jordan Smith, no longer a part of this football team. But he's moving down, moving down. Last year, what, he acquired all those sixth-round picks, couldn't find anyone to move up with. It felt like, not knowing, but it felt like you really could have gotten something done to move up in the second round. You're going to have to move parts. You're going to have to give up draft picks. That's why you acquired those two others next year in the trade that did produce Brian Thomas. But obviously the organization moved down six spots. Let's see. And I know you're most of you aware of this, but Jacksonville gave up 17 for 23. They picked up a fifth rounder this year. And then next year, they get a third rounder and a fourth round pick. So this year's pick was 167. That actually brought you the kid out of Texas, Robinson, who could really end up being dynamic here. You know, I thought Parker Washington was going to be a part of this football team as a fifth receiver, as a punt return, kick return guy. I know that just watching him last year, it felt awkward with him returning punts, right? It was kind of like just fair catch, and that'll be good enough. It seemed odd. But kick returns is something he's done as well. And with these new rules, as you know, we are going to have more kick returns. And the way that it's set up is you're basically going to have two guys deep. So you made the deal for Duvernay, and Agnew is gone. But it felt like to me that Washington would be penciled in as the second guy. They go to Texas now and get the smaller kid in Robinson at 5'9". They got that with that trade that ended up moving down six spots and also included Brian Thomas Jr. So to me, that's the biggest thing I'd look at and say, okay, that didn't happen. The second thing for me is now year after year after year, and I understand you can't do everything, but they continue to really miss when it comes to a pass rusher. Last year was gross. I mean, last year was gross in Yasir Abdullah. He's just not big. He's just not going to be able to get to the QB. You know, maybe an entire offseason of working out and whatever, maybe this new system will benefit him a little bit. He got out there early. What was it, the first three games, four games, five games? And then he was basically a scratch the rest of the way through. So, you know, you used a fifth-round pick on him a year ago, and then you respond this year by going out and making a move in the seventh round. You go to Texas Tech. Again, you get a guy who looks good on paper, 6'6", 280. But what's he going to give you as a pass rush end? We're talking about a guy who played 5 years of college football and has five career sacks. I mean, those are Kalavon Chaisson NFL-type numbers. And again, it's a flyer. It is a seventh-round selection. No argument there. But if you really to look at one position group that this team has not been able to do anything positive with the last couple of years, it's been pass rush end. Now, you may have the best combo in the NFL, or certainly one of them, right? Double-digit sacks, both guys. Allen got paid. Walker's getting better. Where's your depth? You know, last year you got 3 overall sacks. Didn't work with Smoot, didn't work with Chase on. You know all the names, all the free agents who were available a year ago, many of them available again this year. You can get off the street. Have to believe that that's part of the plan. Have to believe it on your 90-man roster that at least one, and I'd hope for 2, but at least one veteran pass rusher, can you go out and find a guy and give him a 1-year show-me deal? If you produce, you get paid. Got to believe that that is next. But to me, that would be probably the biggest loss in this year's offseason and certainly in this year's draft class, not being able to go out now for a second consecutive year and, you know, find a way to get yourself a pass rush defensive end. All right, so we got lots to do over the next couple of hours. As always, we do invite your opinion. That is the best way for you to go on it, or go about it, I should say, is on the text line. That's 641-1010, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. You can also get me on Twitter and or X. That's Blue1010XL. Opening comments each and every night as we get things rolling are brought to you by the good folks over at Schmunez Vision. Okay? I mean, what more can I say about those outstanding folks? If your eyes are not 20/20, I feel for you. If you've really been struggling just to see, or maybe there's been some issues, maybe you're feeling some pain, maybe there's some blurriness, who knows what it could be, right? Do yourself the right thing. Set up an appointment today. Visit the very best in Jacksonville. Go to Schmunez Vision. Okay, I've known Dr. Neo Schmunez for forever. The man performed surgery on my right eye, just went in for a checkup. He saw something, had to be removed the next day. He performed it. It's all part of what they do when it comes to high-quality medical and surgical eye care. Laser eye surgery. The rest of your days, never having to worry about finding your contacts or your readers and why your eyes work better in the morning as opposed to night. 20/20 for the rest of your days. The way to set it up, just go to Schmunez Vision. Care. You can see. All right, when we come back, let's talk to J.J. LaSalva. Let's get you involved. What do you think? We'll go over some draft grades. I like it. I like what they did. I love what he was able to pull off in the first round. I would have loved an offensive lineman drafted a little bit higher, okay? The one neglect is obviously a pass rusher. But it appears they have brought in guys that can help this football team, you hope, immediately. So give us your thoughts. 641-1010, that's the text line. It's brought to you by Lifetime Enclosure.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, Jaguars draft class is in. 6 out of the SEC, 9 overall picks. They added a special teamer, as we know. 3 on offense, 5 on defense, the special teamer, a wide receiver, an offensive lineman, a running back, got a couple of guys on the defensive line, a corner, and 1 defensive end. Again, that was their final pick in the 7th round. Of course, they also drafted a kicker in round 6. Tonight's show is brought to you by the good folks over at Miller Electric, where they are hiring, okay? And that includes current electricians. If you're out there and you're unhappy, okay, you're looking for a change, you want to go to one of the best companies in all of Duval, okay, it's as simple as checking everything out and applying. Go online. Go to Miller Electric. Okay, get the very latest on electrical contracting, what they do within our town as far as business and continuity, building intelligence, systems, integration, doesn't matter. I mean, everywhere you go, you see the fingerprints of Miller Electric, whether I'm driving down 210 or Phillips, whether I head out here through Southside, whether I head down to the stadium, and obviously we're aware of what's going to be happening there year after year after year after year after year. So again, if you're looking to move on to a better company, why not join the very best in Jacksonville? That's Miller Electric. For all of the details, go to Miller Electric Company online. You can also go to Miller Careers and get the very latest, everything explained to you what you can do and how you can be a part of this immediately, especially if you're disgruntled as a current electrician working somewhere else. All right, getting a ton on the text line, 641-1010, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosure. Someone saying Calais Campbell is still available. That's kind of what I'm talking about. You know, going out and finding a veteran at some point that can give you a little bit more as far as someone who is coming off the edge, right? Someone who can get to the pass rusher. That was a big mistake one season ago with, just not electing to do that. They thought they had enough in-house, and they clearly did not. So I would expect that with everything that this roster has, and the Jarvis Taylor or the Jarvis Landry situation is a flyer. I mean, why not? I actually think it's a pretty decent move by Trent Baalke. I mean, what's the worst thing that can happen? He doesn't look good and he doesn't get signed. He's been out of football for a year. The last time that Jarvis Landry played was back in 2022. In New Orleans, 25 receptions, 272 yards and a touch. Before that, he went to 5 straight Pro Bowls. And I remember him grabbing 100-plus balls a year. The only problem is the average per, I don't have anything in front of me now, but I just remember from a few years ago, he'd become kind of a short route type of guy, you know, more of the dump down variety that I would expect would be, you know, a slot type of football player, slot only at the age of 31. But we're going to get an opportunity to see him because what's next up for the Jaguars over at the Miller Electric Center will be coming up on May 12th and May 13th. 2 days worth of rookie minicamp. And Jarvis Landry is going to be a part of it. Usually they have close to about 50 bodies out there, right? You'll have the 9 drafted players. You'll have Jarvis Landry. Starting to get names that are trickling in now as far as undrafted free agents that all 32 teams are going to select. Typically, you bring in, you know, maybe as high in the teens, if not close to 20, that you actually call and ask to come and tell them there's a really good chance that you'll be signed on as a practice squad player. And then other free agents. I mean, every year we see that, another 15 or so guys that really have very little opportunity of making a team. But who knows? Maybe every once in a while you can find someone that intrigues you, and all of a sudden you're like, all right, let's sign him. Let's put him on the practice squad, stick him right now on the 90-man roster, and see if he's able to stay. So that's what I'm expecting, somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 up into the high 40s. That would be the amount of guys out there on May 12th and May 13th. Pretty excited about that. That's coming up in 2 weeks. Love that 2-day rookie minicamp. And it's always somewhat intriguing to see where guys are and what they're doing. Remember all the controversy a couple of years ago? Oh, Travis Etienne, he's working out at wide receiver under Urban Meyer. Well, it's because Trevor had shoulder surgery on his non-throwing shoulder. And the word out was they didn't want anyone running into him. You know, you're learning a brand new playbook. They didn't want running backs or offensive linemen bouncing off Trevor Lawrence. So they worked ETN out there. I'll never forget the horrific feeling 2 years ago of going to minicamp and watching Trayvon Walker work with Bill Shuey. Knowing that Trayvon Walker was going to be an outside linebacker in the old Mike Caldwell 3-4 defensive scheme. I was very vocal about that. I wanted to see him hand on the dirt, on the line, in the ditch, a defensive end, or I shouldn't say a 4, but in that type of setting, a 4-3, which reportedly Ryan Nielsen is going to run, and we don't know exactly what is going to happen. That's what made this Mason Smith signing just so incredibly interesting, because he comes another body now inside. Is he a day one starter next to that Eric Armstead? My guess would be no, because of the amount of money they paid Devon Hamilton. Remember Hamilton, I've said this so many times. If you were to look a year ago in August and you were to list the top 5 players, the top 10 players during training camp, at the Miller Electric Center, the best defensive lineman to me, without hesitation, was Devon Hamilton. He just hurt himself. He had that back issue, and it held him back for quite some time. So they really got some depth there, and who knows? Maybe Mason can do a great job against the run and maybe give you a little bit of push. The interior defensive line was terrible last year. There was no push, only three sacks as a unit. You know, Big Foley didn't do anything, and Hamilton was hurt, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're plugging in the Gotsises and the Jeremiah Ledbetters and guys along those lines. We mentioned Tyler Lacy last hour. Guy he can move around. Maybe he's a big end. Right? He wasn't a 3-4. He was a big end. Perhaps he can move inside and create a little something in this new defensive scheme. So overall, pretty big fan of the pick, but I think it becomes the biggest wild card of them all, the selection of Mason Smith. All right, JJ, we talked about it. We were off the air. Oh, I don't know. I'm guessing an hour and some change, maybe a little bit more, before the Jaguars elected to get Mason Smith in the second round. Any reaction at all to that signing?
Not really. I thought they'd get a cornerback, but it looked like they couldn't draft up or they didn't want to. And they settled for the Florida State guy later. But, yeah, I don't really know. Besides the first two picks, I've never even heard of any of these guys. So, yeah, that's my draft insight for you.
There you go, J.J. LaSalva. He could be, honestly, he could be the steal of the draft. I mean, this guy has first-round ability, but how many times have we said that? We said that about Walker Little, right? We said that Cisco, not first round. He's a safety. I'm trying to think of some other players that were drafted around here that we spoke on. If they were healthy, they could be first round talent. I guess that's it. You know, I'm thinking back maybe, you know, guys like Josh Oliver, the tight end, or maybe Juwan Taylor, who did go high in the second round. Players like that that we always were told, you know, Cam Robinson. Certainly go back to his draft class in 2017. Very easily could have been a first-round pick, but did slip into the second round. He is the massive wild card of this year's draft class. And I think it's a little too soon to start pumping up Saxonville, you know, 4 years later. I just do. I mean, remember how spirited that defense was, and one of the greatest parts of it is that you had Unique and you had the drafted Josh Allen, but you also had Calais, who was an every down defensive end, who they moved inside on pass rush scenarios. And he was a beast, an absolute beast. You know you're getting better with Eric Armstead. You know it. You just hope he's okay. He's missed 13 games the last couple of years. He's had everything from an ankle to a shoulder, and he's not getting any younger. Right? You hope he's going to be ready to go. But if you could plug Mason Smith in, just to think about what that could possibly do to this pass rush is very interesting. I still believe they have to find another part, though. And you can't go into camp banking on the fact that Yasir Abdullah and Miles Cole, a last year's fifth and a this year's seventh, is all of a sudden going to fix all of your depth problems on the defensive line. I don't buy that. You know, do they bring back DeJuan Smoot? I would think no at this point. I mean, the Calais Campbell thing is really attractive. I think he made, what, $9 million last year in Atlanta. What's it going to cost to get Calais Campbell? All right. It'd be brilliant to bring him back. I don't know what he has left, though. Okay, I mean, Ryan Nielsen was there with him, right? He only spent a year with him. He was a co-defensive coordinator 2 years ago in New Orleans. He spent last year as the defensive coordinator in Atlanta. If anyone has an opinion on Calais Campbell, wouldn't it be the new defensive coordinator, Ryan Nielsen? Yes, it would. And again, if you look back and we were to rewind last year's shows at this time, we kept talking about waiting. Does every day that you wait for these defensive ends, does the market bear itself a little bit more? Do they become desperate? They'll take less. Of course, if someone wants to get injured, then you can always make the case that they become more attractive because it absolutely becomes a scenario where it is a need for this football team. They were burnt by that last year. You know, they brought in Jadeveon Clowney. They brought in a couple of other guys or spoke with some other guys. You got the money. You got $30 million. It's going to cost you $8 to $10 million for the rookies. You got $20 million. You still have an opportunity to restructure the two highest cap numbers on the 2024 roster. Christian Kirk is making $24,236,000 for a slot wide receiver. Big fan of Kirk. We saw what happened when he went out. Is this it? Is this the final year? If not, restructure it. Right? Create some more money. Cam Robinson, $21,909,000. Is this it for Cam Robinson? It feels like every year it's it. I shouldn't say that because they franchise tagged him a couple of years in a row, but last year was supposed to be it for Cam. Now all of a sudden you're paying him over $1 million a game, and he's got a cap figure of $21.9. You can restructure his contract and create that much more cash. I'd be surprised if they did anything else now, not named Trevor Lawrence. And for my buck, what's the hurry? I'm making Trevor play this year under $11.7 million, year four of his rookie contract. Trent Baalke said that the fifth year has been picked up on Trevor Lawrence. Again, that is a team option that only applies to first-round draft picks. The deadline is May 2nd. Well, they've picked it up for both Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne. The Travis Etienne one is a steal, $6.1 million. So you know you have him in for the next 2 years. Trevor at $25.7 million is fine for 2025. I'd leave it alone. If he performs like the expectations in 2024, okay, you eat the final year of the contract, and then you put together a massive extension, probably making him the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. Possibly Mahomes could stay ahead of him. But outside of that, all of these deals we saw with Herbert and Hurts and Burrow and all of these, he's going to pass them by. He's not going to give you a hometown discount. He's not going to take less. This organization has to make up their mind. Is he your franchise quarterback or not? If he's your franchise quarterback, you have to pay him. And everything we got out of there the last 2 weeks, the Thursday before the draft and then beginning this past Thursday, during the 3 days of the draft, it's sooner than later. If I was a betting man, which I'm not, I would absolutely bet that his deal gets extended before the start of play. All right? I don't even think they'd like to drag it through training camp. I think they'd like to get this done by the third week in July. Just my opinion. But that's it. I don't think we're going to see Tyson Campbell right now. I don't think we're going to see, anyone else, for that matter, that they could possibly re-sign. Andre Sisco is in the final year of his contract. So, again, you can create a lot of money. Go get yourselves. Go get yourself a pass rush end. Just bring one in for a look. Defense is going to be really good as far as I'm concerned. 87-37 Blue. Frustrated with Trent's consistent inability to not find value beyond the first round of the draft. I do not understand the second round pick at all. There were too many better options at tackle or corner. These guys in the second and third hope to contribute year one, but there's no way Smith sees more than a tiny share of snaps during the current roster. Why drop a depth rotational piece that likely will not be the starter this season with a second? It's maddening. It's a fair point. I mean, this guy tore an ACL in 2022. It's been a process with his recovery. I'm talking about Mason Smith out of LSU. Baalke gave us the good bill of health, right? He told us he's ready. He did. He spoke on it. They've done their homework. Dr. Kevin Kaplan, have the utmost respect for him. He's a buddy of mine. They brought him through the ringer, right? Like they do every player. And you wouldn't bring a man in like this if they didn't think he could go. Remember, they missed twice last year. They got burnt on Ventrell Miller, and they got burnt on Cooper Hodges. Every team gets burnt. There's an injury all over the place. Hey, for what it's worth, Albert Breer said that there were a lot of organizations who flagged Thomas, Brian Thomas Jr., with his shoulder. So you're going to get a different evaluation from every team and their work with doctors and what have you. And, you know, I don't know how many times I've said this, but it's so, so true. When you were, if you were to list 10 things that were different for the Jaguars between the 2022 and the 2023 season, in my opinion, outside of miscommunication, which was baffling, almost embarrassing, number two, injuries. Guys didn't get hurt in 2022. You lost Ben Barch early. You lost Shaq Griffin in week 5. And you lost Cam Robinson late. That's it. Look at all the injuries last year. I mean, they were just ripped apart. And that's typical. I mean, you're a longtime Jaguar fans. You're aware of it. That's typically the way that this league is. You're going to lose guys week after. You're going to lose guys in camp, and you lose guys week after week after week after week. To me, that's one of the biggest changes from a year ago. They did not get injured, as we know, back in 2022. All right, appreciate it. Brought to you, as always, on Monday night here by the good folks over at Miller Electric. Again, check them out online. Go to Miller Electric at the very latest, and they are hiring right now. If you're disgruntled, if you're upset, you're just looking for a change, why not go to the best in Duval when it comes to electricians? They are hiring. Go to Miller Electric. We got much more to do, including a ton rolling in from you on our text line. 641-1010, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. You can also get me on Twitter or X. That's Ballou, B-A-L-L-O-U, 1010, XL.
Into the Night with Rick Ballou on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Yeah, I think the number one thing you see is the speed, right, on film. And you see the ability to get behind secondary and the second and third level defenders. And that's big, obviously, in our league. And then, you know, again, I mentioned last night, too, there's going to be some different coverages that he's going to see, you know, here at the NFL level. And a lot of teams try to keep that at bay. They try not to get receivers behind you. And, you know, but it's our job as coaches to make sure that we create opportunities to do that and utilize that speed.
That was Doug Peterson. That was Thursday night after the Jaguars selected Brian Thomas Jr., wide receiver, LSU. We're able to move down 6 spots, acquire really good draft capital, particularly for next year, with a, what was it, third and fourth rounder or a fourth and fifth rounder? Let's see. It was a third and fourth rounder. That third rounder could be a top 100 pick. It will be a top 100 pick. And if it's not, that means the Jaguars won the Super Bowl or played in the Super Bowl, right? 32-32-32. I guess it will be a top 100 pick unless somehow, Roger Goodell adds a franchise and
well, wouldn't it
Germany
not be about how the Jags finished, but about the team they traded with finish?
No, I believe it's already their property. The move has taken place. I believe that is how, yeah. That's
how. So if the Jags get the Vikings' third round pick next year, they get wherever the Vikings finished.
The way that I understand this. This is already their property, regardless of what.
Yeah, my point is, like, the Bears traded this year with, who was it? Carolina. And Carolina finished dead last, so they get the first pick.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, and there are examples where that is true, no doubt.
That's what's going to happen. The Jags don't get, like, back-to-back third-round picks wherever they finish.
Yeah, because their own pick will be where they finish, so it will be when Minnesota picked. Okay, you're right. No doubt about it, because they have their own pick in that round.
Yeah, so they didn't swap picks.
No, they did not, and that's what I was double-checking here, because when you swap picks, that's where it gets a little bit more confusing. They did not move any picks. They acquired three extra picks from Minnesota. Pick number 167 this year. So third and fourth round next year, yeah, Jackson will have their own picks, and yes, they will have
additional
picks.
And I don't expect Minnesota to be great. I mean, they got a rookie quarterback, and they could be bad.
You're correct. No doubt about it. All right. Hey, listen, this is concerning, okay? The 1939, and I get it here. It says, Ballou, at the end of the day, Thomas was the other guy. He was the other guy at LSU. Got to be a little worried about that. He was the other guy at LSU. And we're talking about a number one here. I mean, Christian Kirk was the third guy at Arizona. Gabe Davis was the second guy at Buffalo. Zay Jones was the third guy with the Raiders. And now you use a first-round pick. Things do change. The situation with Malik Nabers is phenomenal. I mean, he's an incredible football player. But what Brian Thomas Jr. is now adding, and Doug Peterson talked about it there at the top, two things that we have not seen Trevor Lawrence do in his 3 years in Jacksonville is what he did all the time at Clemson. Number one is goes. Just straight out burning down the field. This kid averaged 17.3 yards a reception while he played at LSU. The other thing we've seen somewhat of, but not nearly enough, in my opinion, is back shoulder throws. And this quarterback does have the accuracy to make those throws, and all of those throws, for that matter. Obviously, he's got to become more effective, right? There are times where he misses some easy throws, and I know that that is a little bit frustrating. But to me, that is what is so promising about this. You know, the other issue, and it's fair, okay, is when you look at Brian Thomas Jr., he's a one-hit wonder. And you use the, you know, now you use the 23rd pick in the draft. This isn't a top five pick. This isn't a top 10 pick. But he's still, hopefully, a true wide receiver one, which this organization has not had forever. It wasn't Calvin Ridley. Don't waste my time. Don't waste anyone's time and tell us that Calvin Ridley was a wide receiver one. He wasn't. Christian Kirk's a very good football player. He's a slot guy. He is probably the wide receiver one now on this team, but you want a guy on the outside that can do everything that we just identified. And if you look at what Thomas Jr. did last year, you know, one-fourth of his receptions were touchdowns. 17 of 68. Right? 17 times 2 is 34. 34 times 2 is 68. One-fourth of the balls that he caught last year were touchdowns. He had 17 from the Heisman Trophy winner. Those 17 led all of college football, and he had an average of 17.3. And Trent Baalke, several times during his post-game presser or his post-draft presser, went back to the fact that LSU and attempted balls to him 20 yards or more than 20 for the season. Hey, that's outstanding.
That offense was sick.
It was. They just didn't have a defense. And although I love this Harold Perkins kid, and I actually looked at first-round mocks for next year, he wasn't on it. I was like, I wonder if he's going to get hit with the undersized type of label.
Yeah, people have been disappointed since he, you know, out of high school, he was like the number one guy.
Yeah. He didn't even play against Florida State 2 years ago on that opening night.
I remember that.
In the Superdome. He certainly played last year. You see what they list him at. But again, these heights and weights lie. They have him at 6'1", 220.
People were pissed that he wasn't rushing the passer enough last year.
I wonder if he is a safety. You know, he's got the body of like a Telvin Smith. He's got the body of like a Derek Brooks. Those are two to come to mind. Yeah, they both played well. Certainly one was a Hall of Famer. But when you get back to Thomas, you know, last year, 31 balls, 361 yards, an average of 11.6. His freshman year, 28 for 359, an average of 12.8. So he contributed at LSU as a freshman and a sophomore, but he was nowhere near the guy, right? And even this past year, he was the number two guy because of how talented Malik Nabers is. You can ask this question a lot of different ways, and we can go through development, which is on Chad Hall now, right? It's on this staff to develop their players, including Brian Thomas Jr. But if you were to word it this way, there is some validity to it. If you're not even the number one wide receiver on your team in college, how can you expect to be the number one wide receiver in the NFL? Fair or unfair?
I think it's unfair just because LSU is always, like, strapped with the best of the best. And, you know, just because a guy isn't the alpha in college doesn't necessarily mean he's not going to translate to a great player in the NFL. A lot of texters are saying Justin Jefferson was, like, the other guy at LSU.
Fair point.
I don't think that Thomas is going to end up like him.
Fair point.
But even if he's like three quarters of him, that would be amazing.
Well, LSU pushes out so many incredible
receivers. That's what I'm saying. There's no shame in being the second best guy on a wide receiver core at LSU, especially when the first one was a top 10 pick.
It was Reddick? It was Lewis Reddick who made the comment that
Riddick.
Yeah, Lewis Riddick at ESPN, right? Formerly Monday Night Football. He was the guy that went on and, you know, spoke about him being more aggressive, having a little bit more oomph, you know, wanting the ball, demanding the ball. We get on these divas all the time at that position, but what do we get on them for? It's two things. Number one, pay me more money, and number two, throw me the damn ball. That's all. What I mean, Stephon Diggs caught over 100 balls every year, and he was still feuding with Buffalo, feuding with you know, Josh Allen and others, his brother on Twitter. I mean, give me the ball. And you look at his numbers, you're like, bro, he's caught more than 100 passes. That doesn't matter. That's what they do. And listening to that analysis, I was a little bit set back by it, that he didn't feel that he has that type of personality. And that's in it where he is a true dog, that he is a guy that's going to be like, hey, listen, Trevor, give me the damn ball. That's what you want. You want guys who want the ball. All right? I mean, Jimmy Smith here. I remember Keenan McCardell, who's kind of funny amongst the players and amongst members of the media back during that era, that, you know, Jackson will win a game, and I'm not trying to paint Keenan as selfish, because that would be wrong. But there was at times where the Jaguars would win a big game, and you look at Keenan's stat sheet, maybe he had 2, 3, 4 receptions. He was unhappy. He was unhappy because he was convinced he was open. He wanted the football. And again, it's hard to deliver that without making him sound selfish, and he wasn't. He just wanted the football. I think you want guys like that. You absolutely want guys like that. And, you know, to listen, this is apparently part of his makeup that he does not do, right or wrong. I'm going to be asked about it. I'm sure he will once camp gets back here in less than 14 days. Already looking forward to that. That'll be a blast coming up on May 12th and May 13th. All right, let's continue with some of your feedback. Just a ton rolling in right here tonight. 641-1010 is always the best way for you to get a hold of us on the text line, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. You can also get us on Twitter, getting quite a few there. Baloo1010XL.
Into the Night with Rick Baloo on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I was super excited to be on my way to Jacksonville, being able to share that moment with my parents, having my family there. It was a great experience for me. It was a great time just to have them there with me. And Jacksonville was somewhere I felt like I could fit in at, so I was very excited.
Comments from Brian Thomas Jr. That was Friday when they flew him in after obviously being selected Thursday night and met with the local media here on Friday. Jaguars official notes list him at 6'4", 205. The combine had him at 6'2", 209. Okay. This could be phenomenal. Could be. We'll have to wait and see. And again, I'm getting a few more on Zay. There's no reason to do anything with Zay now. You wait post June 1st, where if you do decide to move along from him, you can recoup, I think it's six out of the $12 million that you owe him. And it would end up being only a dead cap hit of three, where right now it's you know, nine. So obviously, only makes sense. A listener brings up, Rick, does Travis Gibson provide any help as a defensive end with a move to a 4-3? He's one of the more intriguing guys that they have added because, again, I'm not going to lie to you. I don't know much about Travis Gibson. I've read about him, okay? He's a 6'4", 255-pound linebacker that can move around a little bit. He was a former fifth-round pick. He did nothing as a rookie in 2020 in Chicago. He had his best year in 2021 with seven sacks. I want to say that Bill Shuey was his coach that year in Chicago, okay? And then in 2022, three sacks. Last year, he moved on over to Tennessee. He had one sack in eight games. So what a find. And, you know, there feels like, you know, maneuvering some of these guys around, asking them to do this, asking them to do that, does make a little bit of sense. But I don't know. That's the point. And we'll have to try to get clarification moving forward. We'll actually see with our own two eyes once OTAs get underway as to where he is lining up. And this defense as a whole is really under the microscope. To me, this is going to be one of the most fascinating years because it feels like season after season after season, all the focus is on the offense and on the quarterback and everything around him. Well, after a real boring defense, a very predictable Mike Caldwell defense, it feels like this defense is going to be unlike anything we've seen in 10-plus years. I mean, we don't want to go back and talk about the Gus Bradley, Todd Wash defenses and then Mike Caldwell after that. But if it does, it feels, and I get it, whenever you bring in a new coordinator or a new coach, there's always that positivity and, oh, this is really the find, this is really the guy. And I don't want to overdo it, but it does kind of feel like it is going to change this year. I have to say this, though, and JJ, you remember it. All of the love, all of the talk, Mike Caldwell, oh my goodness, the defense they ran in Tampa. They never did the same thing twice. They moved guys all over. They had exotic blitzes. Tampa was able to do this. The feeling that I had 2 years ago with Mike Caldwell is that he learned under that defense, even though he went over to Arizona as well, and learned in Tampa that was going to be what he tried to employ here. Now, he had, as a position coach, he had phenomenal players in Tampa. I mean, Hall of Fame, Pro Bowl players, which he has not had here, but didn't work that defense nearly as much as I think a lot of us actually did expect.
That's the thing when you get like these assistant defensive coordinators and like you don't know what they actually did, you know, and what they're going to bring. You know, he wasn't the actual DC in Tampa, right? He was just like, this was his first ever job as a DC here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Blue, would you rather have Thomas Jr. or Ridley? I mean, it's a phenomenal question.
For how long, how much money?
Right.
I mean, like the context of it, obviously you want the guy in the rookie deal. But do you think that Ridley will be better next season than Thomas? Probably.
If it was the 2024 season, I'd say Ridley.
Of course.
Because he's worked.
He's a veteran.
Right. He's worked with this offense. He's worked with Trevor. He's worked with the coaching staff. So for 2024, and again, he's a rookie, Thomas Jr., even though there are high expectations. So I'm cheating as far as your answer, because you want one or the other. I'd say Ridley for 2024, but as far as the future, absolutely Thomas Jr.
Yeah, how much does Ridley cost compared to Thomas?
Mm-hmm. 1939. He wasn't even a wide receiver at LSU. Yada, yada. Hard to judge you guys' talent when you have an absolute stud across the field from him drawing defenses. All right. Baloo, if ETN keeps his production up after year five, or franchise him or release him after the year to avoid being locked in to any decline, 47-04. My opinion is that ETN plays this year and next year, and he's gone. Because it's one of two things. He's going to be so good, he's going to outprice the position. Or number two, regardless of how good he is, they're just going to look at example after example after example of running backs after 5 years in the league and how they're not worth the price tag. I mean, look at Zeke Elliott back in Dallas.
You don't think they'll tag him for a year, maybe? It is a lot of money, but it's only for a year.
Didn't we look that up a couple weeks ago? Then they go up to like 13. It's probably the second.
It's probably going down.
It's probably the second lowest position, but you know, not punter or kicker. Outside of safety, I would have to believe running back is even lower than guard right now, the way it's being received.
So
this league.
Running back is only almost $12 million. That's it.
For this year. Yeah. So go up in a year. Okay. Is it the lowest position? Outside of safety?
Yeah. Safety is more. Safety is 17. Yeah.
What's guard?
So quarterback's 38. Right. Running back's 12. Receiver's 22. Tight end is 13, or it's like 12 and a half. Lineman, just in general, is 21. Defensive end is 21. Defensive tackle is 22. Linebacker is 24. Cornerback, 19.8. Safety, 17. And kicker punters, around $6 million.
And those numbers are going to go up, and that's 2 years down the road. Those are this year's numbers, where ETN's right here in year four. Year five has been picked up. He'll make $6.1 million. So we're talking about the 2026 season.
The number could go down, though, running back by then.
Yeah. Yeah. Get a lot of people here tell me Justin Jefferson was the other guy to check. Fair. Absolutely fair. Again, there's so many different ways you can look at stuff. Right? If you word it the way I did, it's like, wow, yeah. If you bring it up the other way and you look at Jefferson and Chase and look at some of these LSU wide receivers, it's like, man, that is just an absolute factory, the guys they have been pushing out. All right, we got much more to do, getting some good stuff from you rolling in. As always, the best way to do it is the text line brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. That number is 641-1010. Also, get me on Twitter, Baloo1010XL. The text line is brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Happy birthday, Willie. 91 today, Willie Nelson. My favorite song, even though it is a cover.
Living on the road, my friend, was gonna keep you free and clean.
The great Pancho and Lefty, he along with Merle Haggard. This was originally written in 72 by the Towns Van Zandt. I don't know if they were a band or he was a solo artist. But anyway, my favorite Willie Nelson song. Smoke him if you got him, Willie. 91 years of age. That guy's still touring, man.
He certainly will be celebrating tonight.
He was just in St. Augustine like a month ago. He's still out there giving it his all. Some pretty good stuff. Hey, major shakeup at CBS and the NFL today. We had Phil Simms on about a month ago. And he actually wanted to stick around for a couple of segments. It was a little intriguing. He had all these good things to say, but he's out after 26 years. No longer with CBS. You know, he did studio stuff. He worked with Jim Nantz as the number one team.
Do you think it has anything to do with coming on the show?
Before he, yes! This is the downfall for everyone. Yeah, this is a show killer. Before being replaced by Tony Romo, and then he went back into the into the studio, and so he's out. Boomer Esiason is out. The new addition becomes Matt Ryan, Okay, so it's JB, it's James Brown, it's Bill Cowher, Nate Burleson, who's, you know, I wish he wasn't there only because I wish he was still on.
Good Morning Football.
Yeah, Good Morning Football. I guess he did the CBS gig late in his career at NFL Network as well. But I just, yeah, I miss Kate Adams and I miss Nate Burleson on Good Morning Football. It's not nearly the show it once was, and that's disappointing. But J.J. Watt had his first season during, you know, 2023, so they're all going to return. Matt Ryan steps in. That's it for Boomer. Boomer's got a morning radio show on WFAN, and I think he does some Westwood One or some, like, Sunday night games or
Boomer and
whatever
Carton,
it is.
Right?
Yeah, they got a, you know, big show out there in New York City, so he's going to be fine. I don't know what's up next for Phil Simms. And I feel like I'm in the minority here because I just heard it forever that people didn't like Phil Simms. I liked him. I did. I didn't see what the overall angst was in Phil Simms, but obviously there were people out there who were not a big fan of him. And what do you have now? You have something rolling in on RG3
yeah,
as well?
Yeah, Pro Football Talk is sort of reporting. You know how they do over there.
I do.
But he's like, it looks like his job at Monday Night Football is, quote, in jeopardy, which he wasn't one of the guys in the booth, but he was one of the guys at the table, you know, at halftime, pregame, stuff like that. Because they brought in Jason Kelce today.
It's a tough business.
It is, and it's a tough job because you basically have like 10 seconds to say whatever you want to say about what you saw in the first half. Like, they have so many people sitting at the desk. They got to do highlights. They have to do like 3 rounds of commercial breaks, and then they're like, all right, Phil Simms, what do you got to say? And it's like, and there's probably a producer near like 10 seconds.
Run, run, run.
Yeah.
Pass. Back to, yeah, I'm with you. Now, you and I heard a lot of him last year because it seems like he was calling or he was the analyst on a lot of Florida State and Miami broadcasts.
Which I think he'll still do. We're talking about RG3. Yeah. I think he'll still do that just because he's not on Monday Night Football. ESPN, they use and abuse you, man. Like, they have you doing everything. Look at Todd McShay. He was like their number one draft guy besides Mel. I guess he almost became like their number one. They still have him, had him going to like different games every Saturday, doing sideline. Like, yeah, they take advantage of you being under contract. So RG3 will certainly be working ACC Network games this year.
Yep.
And I think he's all right.
Yeah, he
tries to be like too
Barkley-ish.
Yes, and like say he tries to be like too, hey, I'm going to say stuff that's going to get me to go viral. I'm going to try to say like something real hood or like cool that like I know is not his personality, but he'll say it anyway, knowing the internet's going to love it. Like last year there was a guy, he's like, oh, that's a Black Air Forces guy. And it's like, first of all, only
about
like 3 people watching this even understand what that means, dude. Yeah.
Didn't he say something about, I think he said something about God or Jesus. He put it in like a word, in like a unusual context.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I bet if you Google it, it'll pop up. It was something that, you know how it is nowadays.
Some wild comment, yes.
Yeah.
RG3 makes bizarre Jesus reference during Ole Miss LSU broadcast.
Did he say what he said?
The coverage was there. He was just describing a play. The coverage was there, Griffin said. They lifted that man up to the sky like he was Jesus, letting him know they were going to put him on the cross right here.
Anyway, an interesting football analogy or indoor description.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. He's goofy.
Yeah.
Almost
like him.
For his own good sometimes.
He's married to a former Florida State track star.
And he is a Christian, so I know he's not saying anything negative about Jesus, but he's goofball. That's it. Yeah, someone texter said it perfect. RG3 is a bit of a cornball. Yes.
draft grades. Yahoo gave Jacksonville a C. As a matter of fact, they gave Atlanta the worst draft class, D-, obviously, by going out and selecting a quarterback in the first round. No one saw that coming with Michael Penix Jr. The only other team who received the D was Denver. C- for San Francisco. Then it's Jacksonville right there with Carolina getting a C. Over at CBS, our buddy Pete Prisco gave them a B. Chris Stroprasso gave them a B minus. So, you know, there's a variety of different grades that have come in. That's typically where they are. And I think for the most part, you tend to grade a little bit easier than harder. I mean, I'm just looking here. I'm looking back at Yahoo. You've got five A's. You've got a ton of B's. I'm guessing high in the teens, maybe even 20. And then you got a couple of five C pluses, the two C's, the C minus, the D, and the D minus. So, you know, to put it on paper, to put these players on paper, you got to do something pretty absurd in order to get a really bad grade. But according to this, the Jaguars had the fourth worst grade, tied with Carolina. Against San Francisco, a C minus, the D for Denver, D minus for Atlanta. Jacksonville came in at a C. But Prisco had him in a B. The other thing that I don't believe I talked about a little bit earlier, but these comparisons that are coming in on Mason Smith, the name is Chris Jones.
Oh, I love that.
And again, that's why I began the show with him. This is, even though he's a second round pick, so he's projected to be a longtime player in this league. But he truly is a wild card at number two because he could be so, so good. I mean, he could be just fantastic. Or there's a little bit of school of thought that, you know, it's not going to work for him. And he was a productive player when healthy at LSU, but he was not the five-star, can't-miss prospect. I guess depending on how you look at it, he still got selected a few years later in the second round. To me, that's a success story, right? He made it. You know, he wasn't a top 10 pick that maybe he envisioned he would be, but he's, you know, he had that injury in 2022 and the ACL, which definitely did set him back. But getting that and looking at that with Mason Smith and that particular grade is pretty interesting. All right. Hey, spend a quick second on it here before our final break of the night. But we've only had one team that has advanced from 16 to 8 to, you know, and moved on to the second round of the National Hockey League playoffs, and that is the New York Rangers. They sweep the Washington Capitals in four straight games. The great Alex Ovechkin, four games, 0 points. Okay?
Not even an assist.
Nothing. No goals, no assists.
Did he have a down year?
He came on late. You know, the last 10 or 12 games, I want to say he scored like 12, 13 goals. He really came on very late during the season. And if you look at his overall numbers, he still does have an opportunity to pass Wayne Gretzky for the most goals in the history of the National Football League. Where is it?
National
right
Hockey League.
The National Hockey League. Yes, that would be hockey and not football. Alex Ovechkin during the regular season, 79 games, 65 points, 31 goals, 34 assists. Okay, he's 38. He'll be 39 in September. To put it into context, this is a guy who's well over a point a game. Okay, he's played 1,426 games. He has 1,550 points, 853 goals, which only trails Wayne Gretzky all time. But, yeah, it was down. He scored 42 a year ago. He scored 50 during the 2021-2022 season. So he did come on towards the end, but I'm just wondering how much longer for Alex Ovechkin. I'm sure that record is there, and he wants it. He wants to break the great Wayne Gretzky. But he was knocked out along with his team, the only in the NHL to already move on to the second round is the Rangers, who look right now almost unbeatable. Now, Tampa is trying to stay alive. They're in Miami. They're up early 1-0. 7 minutes to go now in the first period. Tampa won the first three in that series. Tampa Bay did win game four, so they are facing elimination. And we'll try to win tonight. Jessica Blaylock, our friend out there, covering that game. Of course, she does work for the Florida Panthers, but a lot of hockey left there. That's coming up tonight. Actually, it is underway. Then the Stars and the Golden Knights is, you know, Dallas was phenomenal this year. They had seven more wins than a defending cup champion, the Las Vegas Golden Knights. Game three, actually, it's game four. I'm sorry about that. That'll be at 9:30 tonight out in Las Vegas. So some pretty good stuff happening there as well. JJ, I know you spend most of your attention watching the NBA. We're just underway as well in Miami. Boston and Miami have tipped off. Boston up 2-1 in the best of seven there.
Yeah, I was surprised that Boston got or dropped game two, but they really manhandled them in game three. I don't foresee what happened last year to happen again with a massive upset when Miami took down Boston. For me, it's smooth sailing for the Celtics through the East. I mean, you have Giannis and Lillard out. They're probably not going to make it out of that series. The Knicks are about to win, so you have Embiid out, who looks terrible and hurt. Boston, to me, man, it's them versus the Nuggets, probably.
The only team who's advanced so far in the NBA are the Timberwolves. They got it done four straight over the Suns, including winning yesterday out in Phoenix. But we're starting to stretch a little bit here with Indy up 3-1 over Milwaukee. As pointed out a moment ago, JJ, the Knicks, a 97-92 winner. So they're up 3-1. Clippers, Mavericks tied at two as they get ready for their fifth game.
And Lakers might be done tonight. So yeah, they're down 3-1. They tip off at 10 o'clock. I did not expect them to win game four, mm-hmm, but they had enough pride to pull it off. But I foresee a gentleman sweep tonight in Denver.
Could have that in Denver tonight, and then as well Thunder Pelicans. Right now OKC up 3-0. So game four coming up at 8:30. That'll be on NBA TV. All right, when we come back, let's put our final touches on this Monday edition. Adam Kaplan's going to join us tomorrow at 6:30. Adam, formerly of ESPN, does a great job on NFL Sirius Radio. Very good information, man. I will tell you that I text Adam all the time. Get him on the show whenever we can, but he's a very busy guy. He's also a very well-connected guy. So I'm looking forward to that tomorrow night. I hope you are as well. We'll do that at 6:30 with Adam Kaplan and get his opinion on what he believed the Jaguars did. That's coming up tomorrow night. Tonight, we still got plenty to do. We're with you till 8 o'clock.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Hacker Nation will join you at 8. We're back tomorrow night, 6 to 8, 6:30. Adam Kaplan, NFL Sirius Radio. We will get everything from Adam on this year's draft. That involves the Jacksonville Jaguars getting a lot of really good stuff rolling in tonight. 641-1010 on the text line, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. Also on Twitter, Ballew1010. XL. Here's a great point. Okay. 74-29. Ballew, we keep saying how bad LSU's defense was last year, yet we draft two players on their defensive line and hired their fired defensive coordinator. Interesting. Of course, that's Matt House. He was brought in with Ryan Nielsen, the changes that were made on the defensive side, spent the last 2 years as the D coordinator at LSU. Prior to that, he spent 3 years as the linebackers coach with the Kansas City Chiefs. He's going to be the inside linebacker coach here. Ryan Nielsen cut his teeth defensively on the line. That was his bread and butter before becoming a co-defensive coordinator, or as he was the co-defensive coordinator 2 years ago in New Orleans, and then last year he ran the defense in Atlanta. Now he's obviously part of the plan here. Change around that defense. And again, there's some school of thought that the wrong side of the staff was fired, that it should have been the offensive guys who were fired, that they're the reason with those turnovers and not being able to run the football. You know, you look at the takeaways, they were still really up last year. I happen to like to Shea Townsend particularly. You know, their passing game coordinator defensively. Thought he was a very good defensive coach. But they moved on, and they made some changes. So we'll see. And if that's not enough for LSU, I mean, this whole deal now with Jarvis Landry, I actually love it. I mean, why not? I just wish you'd do the same thing with some defensive ends. You know, Landry's been out of the league for a year, didn't play at all in 2023, dealt with some injuries late in his career. You know, he was really effective in Cleveland and Miami, went over to New Orleans. Last time he played was 2022, 25 receptions, 272 yards and a touch. But a guy who went to 5 Pro Bowls. And now, you know, at the age of 31, he's got a real good opportunity. Really good opportunity to turn some things around. So we'll see. I wouldn't, if I was, again, if you were to put percentages on it, I would say somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe 1.5 to 2 out of 10 to make it. How about you? I mean, we don't know how fast he is. I mean, but just by reading the tea leaves here, don't you think it's a tough putt for him to make this team?
Oh, absolutely. I want to know how they pick, like, which team they want to work out at, like, just the closest one. I mean, which rookie mini camp did he want to work out at? How does that work? Does he think maybe that they have the best chance of making this roster, so he picked here? Or did the Jags go after him? Or it's a weird one.
Well, it could be any one of those. You know, you look at rookie undrafted free agents, what they're doing and what they have been doing is working with their agency to look at depth charts and get the best feel that they can. Where do you have the – because, you know, every year there are guys who are undrafted who end up making rosters. And, you know, what and where is your best opportunity? But when you're a guy off the street who hasn't played in a year and your contract has run out, that does become interesting. Who's the other guy that we were talking about who's been injured a tremendous amount with the Saints the last couple of years? I mean,
Thomas?
Yes. I mean, there's another guy. He still carries a pretty heavy package, I believe.
It's crazy. When these guys are done, they're done, man. You know, in baseball, it's like you hang on for a couple years, you bat like 240, and you hit like 15 homers, and you eventually fade away. But you're still under contract and you're still, you know, you have to be paid. But in football, it's like all of a sudden you're like, oh, Stephon Gilmore's a free agent. You know, Javon Landry didn't even play last year. Like, you've randomly, these guys who were seemingly good players, when they lose it immediately in this sport.
You know who's not even on lists they say is so done? It's Dalvin Cook.
Wow.
I mean, 2 years ago, he still put up phenomenal numbers. And, you know, they cut him in a salary cap move, and he went off to New York, did nothing. Where did he go late? Did he go to, he went somewhere like last couple games
the
of the
Ravens.
Year. All right, New York and Baltimore. He did nothing. Go back and look at his numbers a year ago. And, you know, his point, because I've read about it, he's telling people, hey, listen, I just went through a year where I didn't take any pops, no wear on my tires during the 2023 season. I'm ready to go. He hasn't even been picked up. Now, for all we know, teams could have offered him a couple of million, and he's like, yeah, whatever. I'll wait that out and wait for an opportunity to make that much more money. But there is a guy who's out there, another LSU wide receiver, OBJ, is out there for the take. And Michael Gallup is a guy who's made some money in this league, is out there for the taking. I just hope, you know, wide receivers got cool and all that, but what I would like to see now is for this team to be able to go out and get themselves, you know, a pass rush defensive end. And I know that's hard. Calais Campbell has been mentioned a little bit. Right.
Now, would these people be talking about Calais Campbell if he never had played here previously? Like, so many Jags fans on the text line on Twitter, they always want to bring Calais back. But it's like, if he didn't play here, you would never be saying that.
You're 100%.
He did have 6.5 sacks last year, which I was surprised at. I looked that up earlier. I was expecting, like, 3 tops.
Yeah. Well.
But, man, he's old.
Again, they don't have to do much homework there, right? I mean, the guy who took over just was with him. And they talk about leadership qualities and all of that. I mean, they went up and down on Eric Armstead and what he was like, and he's been compared here locally as far as his, you know, leadership and influence to what Calais Campbell was like a couple of years ago. What is Calais now? Is he 36? I mean, I just don't know. And what's his asking price? I mean,
it's 37.
I think he made $9 million last year in Atlanta.
By the way, he'll be 38 by the time the season starts.
Yeah. Still a great ball player. You know?
One of my favorites.
You sign him, he's on, you know, I don't think you can get him to come in here and work and pay him, you know, hey, if you hit this, you hit that, we'll make an incentive laden and pay you. I think for Calais Campbell, it becomes, what do you want me? You got to pay me.
About $7 million last year.
It was $7 million? Okay. I mean, if you could get that production out of him, $7 million this year, sure. I'm sure the Jaguars would prefer to play pay less, but they've got the money. That's not a problem. And it, certainly on a deal like that with him, it would be a one-year contract. That's going to do it. Thank you to everyone for joining us. Some great stuff tonight on the text line. No doubt about it. I don't check it now. The show is over. You can always get me on Twitter, Blue1010XL. Again, tomorrow night at 6:30, Adam Kaplan from NFL Sirius Radio. For JJ LaSalva, I'm Rick Blue. Hackers up next. Talking to you tomorrow at 6:00.